Strike Pose.
By all means, move at a glacial pace. You know how that thrills me.
Welcome to another episode of Season 5 of Three and a Half Gentlemen, the podcast, where three of the four hosts provide a refined and intellectual analysis of movies from our private collections, while one of us tries desperately to keep up. We'll let you decide which host is which, but for now, my name is Sean, and with me, as always, walking down the catwalk, are my co-hosts, Jeremiah.
Details of your incompetence do not interest me, yo.
Eddie.
Did someone eat an onion bagel?
And Brandon.
I'm just one stomach flu away from my goal weight.
This is going to be difficult because I have glasses on reading this. With season 5, we're changing things up a bit. We'll still be picking movies that... What? Like Brandon... Look at Brandon. He looks like Zoolander.
He looks like he's frozen.
Yeah. He looks like Will Ferrell from Zoolander. With season 5, we're changing things up a bit. But for this season, we're playing a loose version of Six Degrees, where each host chooses their film based off the previous one, as long as that movie has a similar actor, actress, composer, director, or writer.
As with every review we give, our goal is to answer one simple question. How many drinks does it take to get through to the film that we just watched? Now, at the end of the podcast, we'll rate the movie based on a scale of 0 to 5, 0 being a perfect film that you could watch stone cold sober, and 5 being sort of the film that makes you feel like your boss just told you how disappointed she is with you.
Last week, we started the season with Oppenheimer. Last week, we started our season with Oppenheimer. By our new structure, Brandon had the choice for the movie for this week. So, Brandon, what movie do we have going to Paris Fashion Week tonight?
Well, Sean.
Emily.
Tonight.
New water.
Tonight, we have the 2006 dramedy, The Devil Wears Prada. This movie takes us into the cutthroat world of fashion and a fashion magazine that's edited by the stone-cold Miranda Priestly. Andy Sachs becomes lost in this world when she is hired as Miranda's second assistant. This movie stars the one and only Meryl Streep as Miranda Priestly, as well as Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, and Stanley Tucci. The Devil Wears Prada has earned an IMDb rating of 6.9 out of 10 and has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 75% with the critics and an audience score of 76%.
As with every movie we review, we try to pair our selection with a cocktail that we hope will enhance the viewing experience. Ed, please take us through the cocktail that we've chosen for this evening.
What's my name? Miranda?
Eduardo.
Nigel. Yes.
Eduardo. You are Nigel.
Thank you very much.
Or Nigel. He actually said Nigel. It's Nigel, okay?
He says Nigel, but I like to call it Nigel.
It's Nigel now, but when he was with his six brothers, it was Nigel when he had to pretend to play baseball underneath the rafters on the bleachers, okay?
No, he ran.
Everybody wants to be us. Everybody wants to be us.
Okay, that's all. While we enjoy a martini shaking that stirred when we watch the James Bond film, that doesn't make sense
Jesus
at all.
Christ,
obviously,
Eddie.
Emily, my assistant to the assistant, wrote this. Let me take off my glasses. While we enjoy a martini shaking that stirred when we watch James Bond, tonight we're drinking Champagne Cosmo.
That works.
Cosmopolitan.
I'm just gonna say it's Champagne Cosmo. To make this drink, combine 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1/2 ounce of triple sec, 1/2 ounce of cranberry juice, 1/2 ounce of lime juice, ice into a cocktail shaker. You can also add a tiny bit of simple syrup and to keep it from being too tart. Next, shake it up until it's cold. Pour the drink into a martini glass and then top it with 2 ounces of sparkling wine. I wish you could just say, you know what, 1/2 ounce of cranberry with lime juice and triple sec. Everything has 1/2 ounce. You know, think about it.
Well, I mean, we want our listeners to enjoy the
problem
the damn
is that no one doesn't really have that much style, sense of fashion. So that's why we have to do this champagne.
Brandon, your scarf is so last year.
Brandon, give me Demarchelier.
Miranda Priestly for you.
No, I have Patrick, you bitch.
Patrick.
All right, let's get into this
Priestley's
movie.
Office. Oh,
I'm sorry.
Damn.
So when you suggested this movie, Brandon, I kind of went, ugh, because, you know, it's kind of not in our
repertoire,
our wheelhouse, right? It's we're four dudes doing a movie podcast mainly about Star Wars and, you know, I feel like. And then I actually sat down to watch it, and I've watched this movie several times. I mean, more than I'd like to admit, I would say, you know, it's like that, you know, more than 10. Likely, yes, absolutely.
By myself, with no reason. I've watched.
Yeah, more than 15. Yeah, probably, absolutely. Yeah. Wow. And I find that this movie is always funny, no matter what. It's always funny. It's got a heartwarming yes. message to it. It's really a grounded picture. I think that stems from Meryl Streep. And I saw an interview with Meryl Streep on YouTube, and she was talking about the generations who have watched her films, and some, you know, think that her best performance was Sophie's Choice. Some think that her best was, Bridges of Madison County.
Deer Hunter.
Yeah. I mean, there's you've got a repertoire
stuck
of
on
50
you.
Films to choose from.
Julia.
But this particular, like, this new generation, like, this is their Meryl Streep movie, which I think is very funny because this is not her Academy Award winning best role. She was fabulous. Don't get me wrong. But this.
She was nominated.
Just, of course she was. Anyway, I just thought that she grounded the movie in a way that you needed to have some seriousness in a movie that seems a little outrageous and ridiculous. Go ahead, Brandon.
Well, I think that one of the things that kind of stands out for me with Meryl Streep is that over the last, I'd say, I don't know, two and a half decades, she's taken kind of a turn in her roles. And she tends to be doing, it seems like, more lighthearted films. I'm thinking Mamma Mia. I'm thinking her like cameo and Stuck on You, all these movies that kind of seem like she's enjoying her time as an actress as opposed to the Sophie's Choice.
Did she do Iron Lady?
Yeah.
She did. But what I think is interesting here is that she plays, you know, in essence, the straight character, right? The straight man in a comedy. I mean, this is definitely a dramedy. There's a lot of drama here, but at the same time, there is so much comedy that is centered around her, but she's not the funny character. And I feel like it's a cool professional choice for her to make. And I think more than anything, it shows just how confident she is as an actress, right? She doesn't have to be the liked character, and she can get away with it because we know her from her arsenal of films that have come before.
I feel like personally, this movie, she already had a perfect career, but like you were saying earlier, this movie stamped Meryl Streep, who people who didn't know who she was. It stamped her career. People just like all of a sudden like, oh, this, she's like, she, personally, I think she made the movie. Like, she made the movie as like, this industry is cutthroat, and this is the type of people who run it in the very top.
First and foremost, I think when you think of the Devil's Wear Prada, you think of Meryl Streep. That's the first person you think about, and she carries this movie, you know? I read something that Meryl Streep, for preparation to get into the character for the role, like, her inspiration was Clint Eastwood or something like that. Like, because when she was working with him on the Bridges of Madison County, because of his ability to command attention in a very soft spoken manner. And so she took inspiration from Clint Eastwood to really hone into this character here of Miranda, which I thought was pretty fucking interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple things. Number one, I think absolutely when you think of this movie, we think of Meryl Streep. I've only seen this movie once before this. And I mean, I'll be real honest. I chose this movie because my wife was like, you should do this movie because you're doing this new format with this season and you guys need to do some more girly pictures. And I'm like, okay, let's go ahead and do this one. So Amanda, this one's for you in a lot of ways. But secondly, I mean, yeah, Meryl Streep is a fantastic, fantastic actress. I think one of the reasons I haven't watched it, Sean, as many times as you have, is that I do personally, this is an unpopular opinion, I know, I don't particularly like Anne Hathaway. I just don't think she's necessarily a good actress. But here's what I want to say. The reason that I chose Devil Wears Prada because of our season 5 format was Emily Blunt. And I remember I liked Emily Blunt. This was the first time that I saw her in any movie. This was really her first major picture. And holy shit, we need to talk about Emily Blunt and how she just fucking commanded her character of Emily. She was the punchline to a lot of the jokes, but at the same time, her frenetic energy just fucking carried so many of those scenes. And I think that she bailed Anne Hathaway, who I think is not a good actress. I think Emily Blunt bailed Anne Hathaway out of a lot of those scenes and really pushed the movie forward.
Emily,
I'm with you on that, but Anne Hathaway, I'm not a fan of hers. I think she's actually a weak part of this movie, but I've never been a fan. I think she's the worst part of Dark Knight Rises. I didn't like her in Interstellar. Mm-hmm. Just not one of my favorite actresses as well.
Agreed. Well, I was going to say, I want to talk about the other. You have Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, the great Anne Hathaway that's coming in. That's supposed to be the backing up with Meryl Streep, but then you have Emily Blunt, and then you also have this other guy named Stanley Tucci, who just like, oh my god, like he brought like the comedy side, like he was just like perfect, fresh. I don't know, like for me, I enjoyed it every time he jumped on the scene. But the first thing is like he was like the left hand to Meryl Streep, and just the first thing of like, did someone eat onion bagel today or something? Right. And then it's just hilarious. Like he's like has this style of him that I honestly could see. Sean, you took a little bit of his style. I see. It's cool. But what do you guys think about Stanley Tucci?
Before Sean, I just want to jump in and say this, that I didn't mean to leave Stanley Tucci out because he's always been one of my favorite actors, like ever. A movie that I think is so under the radar, but it needs to have way more viewing out there is Easy A. And I think that Stanley Tucci, along with Emma Stone, just completely make that movie perfect. But I do want to talk about this movie where Stanley Tucci is in a lot of ways, he's the comic relief throughout the entire movie, right? He has his little quips. He has his little rude comments, you're a size 4, haha, right? But to me, the greatest portion of this movie, the greatest scene of this movie, the greatest line of this movie is at the end when he's been passed up for that job. And, he looks over and you can see he's just devastated. And I mean, talking about acting without any kind of words, it's just the look on his face is perfect. But when he says, I hope for the best, I have to, right? And you can just see that he wants to break down and cry because this has been his dream. And my God, that performance right there is some of the best acting you're going to see. And Ed, I couldn't agree more.
But this movie is summed up in two scenes, and I think you hit the nail on the head, Brandon. One of those is in the car where Meryl Streep describes that she's known for some time what's happened. She just had to figure out how to fix it, and it meant sacrificing people. And what people don't understand is, going into this movie, is the fashion industry is a $1 billion industry. This isn't a place for people to make fun of the color of blue or the how two belts can be so difficult or different when they look the same, because the fashion industry fuels, tens of thousands of jobs, hundreds of thousands of jobs, a whole sector of the economy. I'm looking at it from an economic standpoint.
Oh yeah.
This is like oil, baby. This is like technology. Yeah. This is as important as all the big type of industries. Fashion is just as important as the rest of them. And I think this movie did a beautiful job in revealing that to a character like Anne Hathaway. And the second scene that I think is earlier in the film is when Meryl Streep goes on her tirade of, you think you picked that blue out of your closet or out of some sale bin.
Yeah, anti-fashion.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. To almost revolt against fashion when in fact that choice was made for you decades before in a room just like this. And I think that seriousness to which the movie, the serious tone the movie takes, it makes this movie gives it legs. It can last for decades and decades, and it can be one of those movies you keep revisiting because it has a wonderful arc. If it's just about fashion, who cares? But now this is about business and fashion and relationships and people and getting in and getting out. And I just want to say one more thing before I know I've been long, but to your point, Jeremiah, you said earlier that Meryl Streep took her cues from the quietness of Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
And do you know why Clint Eastwood as a director is so quiet?
No, I don't know why. I thought it was just interesting approach,
So his approach is quiet because in the great part of his career, for 25 years, he worked with horses and outdoors. And the directors would yell, cut, and action, and it would freak out the horses and send them around. Mm. And so what he created was everyone ready, Everyone ready? He'd do this and everyone would kind of like look around, and without any words, he could start a scene. He could end a scene. And that was that's exactly what Miranda Priestley did. She, without any words or very softly, would create such fear or such control over the room that it was just brilliant. It was just brilliant. So I couldn't agree with you more. It was a great analysis.
There's two things here. Like Meryl Streep's approach to the role, it's pretty amazing. Like she could have been in another a person doing this. It could have been like the off the wall, you know, I'm crazy. Where's my stuff here? I'm erotic. You know, that type of shit. But her approach was cold and ice, which makes it more intimidating, which I thought was pretty awesome. Now, my question to you is that I know it's called The Devil Wears Prada. Are we supposed to have, in the end of the movie, are we supposed to have the sympathy for the devil? I mean, you know, is she a product of the ruthless work culture because of that place of the toxic environment of the fashion industry and something like that? Are we supposed to feel like, you know, a little sadness, you know, because she kind of like, you know, you find her like she's actually breaking her walls that moment with Andy in that one room there.
Towards the end in her own house. I think it was Paris where she was about to be, going through her divorce again. So I read something where, Meryl Streep, Miranda, she's like the best businesswoman ever. Like she is doing it correctly. She's leading the business correctly. She's not the devil. I heard the devil's actually Andy's boyfriend. Is it Nate? That actually is bringing down Andy in a different way of like not being supportive. Yeah, I mean, like overall, just at the wrong time, like probably should have been more supportive to Andy. Be like, hey, you know, it's gonna be tough year. I have your back. It's gonna be, you know, it's just overall he kept making her feel guilty over and over and over again. Like, and overall, like Andy could have stayed a little bit longer. That's why I read it's like Nate's could be, is he a villain? I think Nate's a villain. I think overall, poor Nate. Oh my, like overall, bro, like. It's big whoop. Like you're gonna not see your girlfriend as much. Like it's gonna be worth the juice is gonna be worth the squeeze. And like overall, she left this company. If Nate would have been more supportive, let's say Andy got a good job anyways, but she should have. Why not be an editor for Runway? Why she had to go step outside and go lower company a little bit overall.
The reality is if for another year and a half, she could have done anything she ever wanted.
She could have been like up there easily.
This is what I love about the movie, and I think you have hit the nail on the head, is the devil is the thing you don't want to do. The devil is the thing that is perhaps drawing you away from the hard. There's a great line. I think we've done we did a
League of Their Own,
last season, and he says we'd like it because it's hard. This job is hard. The reason why that the success is so great is because the you know it's hard to accomplish. And I think that you're right. Nate took away from that. Nate should have sucked it up, and he's never worked for anything in his life. He's never been ambitious for anything in his life. And then all of a sudden, he watches what Andy can do, and he's like, oh, maybe I should go get a new job. Maybe I should apply for that sous chef position. Maybe I should have a little fucking fire under my ass and not just sit down and make Jarlsberg at home. Like, this is the type of stuff I don't understand her family's reaction. I don't understand her friend's reaction. It's because they're not real friends. You know, your friends, when you go out to embark on a new adventure, they should support you in success and in failure, in detriment and in triumph. You should have people in your corner. And if you don't, then they're not your friends. Go ahead. And I'll just keep talking.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You know, I totally agree with this, that Nate should have been more supportive on what she's doing with her career and everything like that. I do give him props for actually calling her out, becoming something that she doesn't want to be, you know? So he is kind of calling her out, like, you know, this is not you. This is not what you wanted to do and everything like that. However, he should have been more supportive, like, hey, you know, I know this is not the career that you want to do, but you know, I'm here for you, you know, and everything like that, you know? But you kind of see her going to a wrong downward path, you know? I mean, shit, you know? She cheated on him after she didn't show up on her birthday and shit like that, you know? It's like she,
Well, I mean, granted,
she hooked up with someone.
They had been technically broken up, right? They had broken up.
A couple of days after being with someone years.
I'm going to say that relationship was already on the rocks before that.
It was on the rocks, but dude, they didn't actually break it. They said maybe we should have some time apart. That doesn't mean just go to anybody who's available right now.
We were on a break.
I know. Yeah. Well, listen, I want to just throw my 3 cents in here. And I know that this is going to be, Sean, you're going to have a problem with this. I'm just going to heads you up right now. I'm not trying to be a prudent. I'm not saying that every movie needs to have a Disney, you know, kind of ending or morality to it. But one of the things that did frustrate me, and it frustrated me a lot with this movie, is that this is a movie that basically says, whoever you are is not good enough. You have to be somebody else that you're not in order to achieve the success. And to me, I get the reason, but and here's the thing, like her going back at the end and reclaiming her, you know, anonymity or her autonomy, to me was kind of pandering to the crowd, right? It's saying, ooh, well, we need to have this morality like swing up at the end. So she's going to go and she's going to quit her job with Miranda, and she's going to go off and become a writer at a no name publication, right? I get that. But at the same time, the whole movie is about, like Jeremy said, this girl trading on everything that she stood for. She stood for the frumpy clothing because that's who she was. She stood for the low class friends that she had because that's who she was. And then all of a sudden she gets a taste of success or a taste of this better life. And she's just like, fuck everybody, because this is what I want. And I do have a little bit of a hold up with that. Sean, prove me wrong.
So I don't agree with the premise that she knew who she was and that she wore frumpy clothing because she was making a stand against fashion. I think that she was young and inexperienced. And as you go into the workplace, my dad calls it the game. Sometimes you got to play the game. You got to dress the right way. You got to talk the right way. You got to present yourself the right way. And you compromise where you can. And when you can't, you don't. And I will say that's a Peggy Carter quote from one of my favorite Peggy Carter quotes from Captain America: Civil War. But it's true. Sometimes you got to play the game.
But do you think that's
give up a little bit?
Do you think that she's aware of this?
Though? Absolutely.
I don't think that she's aware.
I think she's aware of it.
When she entered this job, she was unaware of it. Yes. Now she is very much aware of it.
Yep.
Okay. You have to change.
That's why she asked help for Stanley Tucci. It's like, hey,
I mean, honestly,
boost me up a little bit. Like, make me
Ed and Jeremiah are the two that work with people most. A day-to-day employee-based relationship, I would say Ed and Jeremiah have more interactions with employees. Is that accurate, or do you have a lot?
Oh, no.
I have a lot, but
yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, Ed has a ton.
So
could you imagine me and my personality in a fucking office? Could you, honestly? Yep. It would be a goddamn nightmare.
I know what office you'd be in.
It would be a nightmare.
You're the office that – where's my, where's my water?
Do you know what I'm saying, though? I would have to make major adjustments to go work for a company. Major adjustments to my personality.
Okay, so I have two things. First thing is, nowadays, people, you know, this job of being able to remote, you don't have to dress up as much going to work. So it relaxes everyone's day-to-day. But I'm telling you, when I have to go in the office, I do bring out my nice shirt. I clean it. I stain it. I make it. I even bring the tie. If I know who's in the office, I'm gonna look the part. I want to play the game. I'm not gonna go in looking like I just jumped off. You know, I woke up and I threw in a polo, and you know, I just played 18 holes. You know, on the golf course right before. Like, I made sure I wear my nice shoes, my nice pants. When I go in the office, I do try to dress the part because you don't know who you're gonna see. And you know what? It's that chance of, you know what? Somebody treats – it's weird to say, but somebody treats you differently because, oh, you're dressed nice today at work compared to somebody else. You're doing probably the same job as this guy, but overall, you just look like you're out of the bed. It's something to be said about that still. It opens up a different door. People treat you a little bit differently with a little bit more – I don't know why, but it's always been that way. So I just know – if I'm at home, I could relax and dress, you know, in a sweater and work from that way. But if I'm going to office, I'm going to make myself a little bit nice. I think Andy got a little taste of this door that's always been closed to her. And she's like, oh, I mean, who doesn't like a little bit of Chanel and Gucci? Trust me, I will wear – if I'm going to office, if I have a chance to get a Gucci shirt, I'm going to wear that in front of people. Like, I will. I won't wear it all the time. But overall, like – I think anyone gets a little taste of that. It's overall, it's an expensive lifestyle though. So that's why people can't experience that as much.
I would say further, it transcends beyond clothing. You know, how often do you change your personality, maybe hide your political opinions just because it's not worth it's not worth expressing them in the workplace or engaging someone. If somebody makes a comment about something, you just don't respond because you don't want to, engage. It's inappropriate to engage. You know, what if screw politics? What if you have a philosophical difference, a worldview difference? What if you have, a difference in, anything, the damn water that the company, buys. There's some things that you just sit down and you take, I guess.
I'm sorry, dude. But the thing is that what Andy's working in was a completely that's 99 violations of work policy rules and stuff like that in this job here. There's she's getting told you may want to not dress like that, but you might want to lose weight at the same time, or you won't be looked at here because this is the way you need to look now.
All
the
talk of the size six.
To me, that's a lot of it doesn't age well. What I'm trying to say is what you see here and to what it is now in the media and shit like that, And I think what happened with Andy is that she lost her moral compass of what she was trying to do and what she was trying to be at the end of the
movie. I agree.
Okay, well, I do think that moment where she was crying to Stanley Tucci, Nigel, and in the room, and she's like, Miranda just hates me. Miranda just hates me. And then Nigel, he was just like, have you really tried? You come in here, you got to think of the other way too, bro. For me, I feel
you
like
gotta play the game
a little bit. He was saying, have you even tried to show up? You taking this job not even seriously, and you see a difference of let me present myself a little bit different. She did lose herself towards the end, but I'm saying right around there when she all of a sudden walked in and got Emily's attention and just Giselle's attention. Hey, I'm just and play the game a little bit differently.
Just but playing the game is changing myself. Her presentation, it's changing her appearance. And to me, that's not changing who you are.
Morality?
That's changing how you look, right? And the thing is, if she doesn't change, she's ostracized. That's literally the whole name of the first quarter of the movie.
Yeah.
Right? And I just think, and I'm not sitting here and saying this needs to be a movie that little girls need to look up to and learn from. I'm not saying it has to be Shrek where we could just be happy with our ogre selves, right? That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that it was a little off-putting throughout portions of it where we see this girl who we want to root for, but ultimately she's becoming this quote unquote devil, right? This beast, this dragon lady. And I mean, it's like, do we really want to root for Andy? I had a tough time rooting for Andy. I cared more about Emily and I cared more about Nigel. I cared more about these fringe characters than I did about Andy. And maybe that was also just my feelings toward Anne Hathaway as an actress and her character just didn't
So why about Emily? About Emily though? Because did she already – this is her lifestyle? This is who she is?
Because we didn't get any previous. We don't know what she was like. Maybe she was always this conceited, self-motivated, driven. If I saw her as this
– can I ask you – you just – can I ask you what – why do you think she – what – evidence is there
Emily
why would you categorize
because of the way because of the way that she treated Andy when she first came in. She was all about her and only her and her rise to the top, which I'm not saying on a corporate world is a bad thing, trust me Sean, I'm on your side with this, but what I am saying is that
I think she was surprisingly honest. She was like, this is what the job takes. I want to win. I'm gonna do this
talking and, shit I understand behind her come back off it, though.
That was not good. I didn't see that, but okay. I'm sorry.
This is where Emily's coming from, right? Okay. She thinks that Andy is the worst job candidate, right? She doesn't know anything about the magazine. She doesn't know anything about fashion. And she doesn't even know the editor of the chief, These are the common things that you need to know. And yet she just goes there and expects to actually, be adored, And I like that Nigel comment, where he's like, Andy, be serious. You're not trying. You're
That's
whining,
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. You want to say poor me? She's picking on you. You want to know why she doesn't want to kiss you on the forehead? Yeah. Or give you a gold star or your homework at the end of the day.
If for me, it creates this little bit of a juggling act, and I don't necessarily like what's being juggled at times in the movie. Does it end up in an empowering way for Andy as a character? Absolutely, right? She gets that reference from Miranda, and we're all supposed to cheer, and we do,
Miranda.
Right? Yeah. And ultimately,
and the smile.
That's great. That's great. We get the smile. We get the smile that only happens, you know, twice in the world. And I get that. And I'm not saying that it's a bad movie or negative in any way, because I like what both, you know, Eddie and Jeremiah were saying about that conversation with Nigel. It's fantastic. It's that slap across the face and saying, well, you signed up for this shit, so follow through. Right.
When
he says, then just quit.
Yeah.
I think that that's such a great statement. It's like, yeah, stop whining, stop complaining, just get through with this. Right. So I guess for me, I'm just saying it was a little bit just kind of imbalanced at times. So we can definitely absolutely move forward.
I was on the same page with you with what you're talking about. Like, it was just a little annoying to me. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on here? Am I supposed to be rooting for her? Because I'm not really rooting for her, you know?
I think
that's the thing.
I think you guys have hit the nail on the head with where the movie doesn't necessarily jive with today's mentality. There's an expectation. If you're going to, and I don't, I'm not going to get on my soapbox, but there's an expectation of the people who everyone's looking at to be that idol. So if you're going to be part of this world where you're going to be a young attorney, you look it, you talk it, you do it. I don't care if you're, you know, you gotta, I don't care if somebody has to make you cry because you gotta lose a couple pounds or that you gotta do this, you gotta do that. There was this expectation that had to be met because they were trying to create a visual and actual idol for people to work up to. And I think that that is not negative. I think it's uncomfortable.
Well, it is.
And I think it's an uncomfortable.
No, I was just going to say, for me, I was watching it and I was reminded of another movie that we reviewed a couple seasons ago. And it's a movie that we all love and we hold dear to our hearts, but it's got the same kind of feel to me. And that's The Breakfast Club. And that's where it's this idea of, you know, you've got Ally Sheedy's character who, you know, is kind of the dark goth girl and nobody gives a shit about her until she gets her pretty pink makeover. And all of a sudden she's this beautiful girl.
Dealing in stereotypes.
It's this idea of, you know what? She, I don't want to use the word happy because she was definitely on the more, you know, emo kind of level, but she was content with herself and who she was. Why change that? Does she make – by changing her to meet Emilio Estevez's dream girl appearance, does that make her a better person? Well, the movie definitely says, yes, it does, right? And I just think that this movie, Devil Wears Prada, kind of toes the same line, right?
I see what you're saying, yeah.
You know, so do you want to talk about – let's talk about, you know, some of the other characters like – I'm trying to think. The guy that the editor that she had
James Hunt or Christopher Thompson,
Christopher Thompson, right? Yeah. So
Simon Baker, the actor.
Yeah. So Simon thoughts, Baker. Thoughts on him as a character. Okay. Is he a dick? Is he just going after something he wants?
He was going after Anne Hathaway from the very beginning. As soon as he saw her
to get in.
Yeah.
But do you think he was attracted to her or was he trying to get in?
No,
he just wanted to sleep with her. I feel like, because at first he was instantly trying to bring her back into that ball gown party. Like, hey, I know some people here. Come back inside. Oh wait, your boyfriend. Like, he was already against that. He didn't like respect her. Like, you have a boyfriend. Hey, you're a writer. Let me see your stuff. He wasn't. Not all that was just a ploy for him to sleep with her. He wanted.
But do you think he was spying on her to get closer to Miranda?
I think that this is everyone has an angle. Everyone's trying to accomplish something. And this is true in business. Everybody you meet, when you meet a vendor, they're trying to make money off of you. You're trying to make money off of them. When you have an employee, they're trying to make money off of the company, and the company's trying to, you know, use them to grow. It's an implied relationship. So to suggest that he was doing something nefarious by getting close to her to try and get an insight, I don't think that's bad. Do I think he genuinely liked her? Yeah. He bent over backwards to get her the Harry Potter manuscript. He went out on a limb to do that. I don't think he did it because he was trying to get close to Miranda Priestly. I think he did it because he kind of liked Anne Hathaway.
Mm-hmm. Well played.
And I think that he identified that her boyfriend was a douche. Yeah. And you know what? I'm going to say something controversial. Just because you have a boyfriend doesn't mean you shouldn't be pursued. Just because you have a girlfriend doesn't mean you shouldn't be pursued. Pursuit is stops at a wedding ring, because sometimes people are with the wrong people, and it is if you find a better match, sometimes you just gotta go for it.
Or if that and other person says it, like, "Hey, this is my boyfriend."
Stop, please. Stop. I don't want to be pursued.
Yeah. No, we need to talk about the Harry Potter scene because That whole segment with the Harry Potter. No, that whole segment with the whole Harry Potter thing. And when she finally lays that copy, it's like, oh, this is an extra copy in case you want it. And they're already bound and they're fucking on the train. Like, you know, that was Miranda giving her.
Mic drop.
There's only one part of that that's horrible. She takes that beautiful steak, that gorgeous fucking steak, and she throws it in the sink. I would have sat down at my desk and I'd be like, fuck, Miranda's want the steak? Fine. I'm going to eat the steak at 11 o'clock in the morning.
No, but
that was the most beautifully prepared steak I've ever seen. And I mourned. I mourned that steak.
Was Miranda testing Andy to fire her? What was it? Just like,
no,
hey,
it wasn't a test.
She was mad that she went inside her house.
It was giving her a no win situation. Like, there was no way she was getting that book, right?
No.
She was no way she was getting that book. And so when she got that book, you can see the one of the, I would say probably the two or three times that we get the flabbergasted, I don't know what to say moment on, you know, Miranda's face. And you know what? That was one of those few times where I like am cheering for this, you know, for Andy, for a character that I'm not cheering for a lot of the time in the movie. And I think that it was such a well played scene. I think it was so well acted. I think it was perfectly paced. And when you just get that cutaway to the two girls just reading the book on the train, I mean, I don't care who you are, you get up and you start clapping for Andy.
Now let's do some fun questions here. Now, do you remember your worst boss? Just
yes.
Kind of curious, where you just like, you didn't want to go to work. You know, that place made it a whole nightmare when you had to work over there. Do you have a boss? You don't have to mention any fucking names. I'm just kind of curious, what was the environment?
So, okay. So I'm going to take this one first. So you guys, for the most part, know that I've worked in schools pretty much my whole life teaching. But my first job was in retail, and I was working at a sporting goods store. Sports Chalet.
Sports Chalet.
We took that shit to the limit until they went bankrupt, and there are no more. But anyway, so I had this department boss. I was in general athletics, right? So it wasn't the manager of the store, but she was the department manager. And she just had it out for all of us who worked under her. And there was about, I think there was four or five of us, right? And she would have us redo, and I'm talking about redo completely, the baseball mitt section every two or three days. And let me tell you, that's way the fuck harder than anybody can understand, right? You have to literally like snip the expensive gloves off of the sensors. You have to match them up size by size.
He still can feel it. He can feel it.
I feel so mad when I think of her. And she would just literally, she was the type of boss that was almost like stereotypical. You watch a movie like this and she's like, I want to emulate that. But she would just assign jobs for us, stupid, tedious jobs for us that literally had no purpose. It was like, you know what? We just moved the soccer ball section there. Let's go ahead and move it where the basketball section is and move the basketballs over here, even though 2 days ago I just had you do the reverse thing. Like, she just wanted us to be doing something major in the department every single fucking shift that we had. And I swear to God, I hated her. And that was the reason that I said, you know what? I don't want to work retail ever again in my life, ever. So, yes, Jeremiah, I got that.
So, damn, I've never worked retail like that. I mean, I sold cell phones for a company, and legally, not illegally. I did that on the side with Sean. But from the company, everything was legal. So Sean was somebody else found a box of cell phones, and I did my own business. But so when I actually work, you know, real corporate stores, all my bosses, I've actually never – I've had harder bosses than other bosses, way definitely light, and then my directors. But realistically, no, I've never had a bad boss. And I just think in my head, if it gets hard, like I just do my job, and then they get off my back, and you know, and I never have to worry about that. And I'm one of those guys that, hey, I'm just gonna keep my head down and don't make waves. And you know what? All of a sudden, you know, people like you, and people open the doors for you because they know I'm a hard worker. But I never had a bad experience with a bad boss. So knock on wood for
me. Nice.
Yeah. Sean, you've never had a boss.
No, I have not. I never had a real job.
He's always been his own boss.
I live a very privileged life.
Yeah, the tough coach.
my worst boss is me. I don't want to work for me. I'm an asshole. I graduated from law school and started my own firm, and then subsequently started several other companies, but I've never really worked for it. I worked for a college. I taught at a college for a little bit. Never really saw an administrator. So, I mean, I really didn't ever talk to anyone. So I can honestly say, legitimately, I've never had a boss in my life.
Oh, fuck, I love that.
You've had a coach that was tough.
I've had many coaches that were tough.
Jeremiah, let's hear yours.
I've had many coaches that I want to pick up and shove.
I kind of want to be like Lloyd Dobler from Say Anything. Like, I just want to have that whole thing where I'm like, I don't want to sell anything, buy anything, or process anything that has a career, you know, but I can't be that person. I think that's the funniest fucking thing. The human resource department, man, it's cutthroat. You know, there's some bosses that are very nice and there's some bosses that are very demanding, and sometimes they can put you on the chopping block, you know, and sometimes it could be stressful. Sometimes it could be fucking hardcore. Sometimes you can, like, you know, leave that building and you're just like, holy shit, I want to smoke a cigarette again because that was fucking stressful. But fuck, you know, you do what you got to do for a family, man. Shit.
I have a question. Okay, so what's the most expensive piece of clothing you own? Glasses, ties, wallets, going to this movie, or maybe that you've bought for someone? Because I know, Jeremiah, you lived that Louis Vuitton life, so you've experienced it.
You know, what's really funny is that before I met Hannah, I didn't know anything about, you know, fashion or anything like that.
You were Andy.
Dude, I can look at someone, I'm just like, oh, that is a that's a
Prada purse.
No, what is that? No, that's not a Prada purse. That's a Louis Vuitton, a 2019 purse or something like that. Or that's a Louis Vuitton, you know, like back in the 80s or something like that. I can tell you what type of design or anything like that in a heartbeat and shit, dude. Yep. And yes,
I'm going to go with Brandon's answer. Sonoma collection from Kohl's.
As he's wearing Ray-Bans.
No. I answer for Brandon.
No, I own a pair of Hokas that were $175, and that almost killed me when I bought them.
All right.
Nice.
By the way,
what is a Hoka? What is that?
What the fuck? Oh, my God. They're shoes.
That's a pretty good shoe. In case you were wondering,
I have some major arthritis in my right foot, which is basically, it kills me. Like, I can't walk without pain. And my foot doctor was like, you need to get these Hokas. And I was like, what the fuck are Hokas? And then everybody around me was like, you should get Hokas. These are my brand new Hokas. Look at these Hokas. And I'm like, fuck, this is the universe talking to me. And I went out and I dropped the most I've ever dropped for any pair of shoes or clothing or anything in my life. And let me tell you, they are a fucking godsend. So let me tell you, if you have foot problems or you just want your feet to be comforted, get some fucking Hokas. They have the worst colors in the world. They are not styling, but fuck, they make your feet feel amazing.
They are the worst colors, right, Ed?
God, I got some blue and black. They are like blue.
They are like the Jordans of plantar fasciitis. Shoes.
Yeah, and let me just tell you, you're walking on sponges, and it makes you just feel like I'm in this beautiful place. Sean, you need to get some Hokas. Anyway, that's what I got, and then my Sonoma collection.
Eddie, what do you got?
I mean, it's that I bought.
Here it is.
It's for the wife. It's a purse, right? It's purses. It's the whole. I don't want a purse this year for Christmas, and then she points out five purses, you know, randomly to me throughout the year. So, you know,
So are we talking like Kate Spade? Or are we talking like?
Now it's tapered down to Kate Spade to Michael Kors, but at one point it was up to like, I mean,
Louis Vuitton.
Yeah, that area. It was Coach. I'm happy it was a Coach, but once it got to Louis Vuitton, I was like, okay, like, you know, after that's going to be Gucci, and then after that's going to be Prada or Fendi, and then all these other names that are way above the
Hermes.
Yeah, it's the price. It's a whole
Hermes,
a full paycheck. Yeah. Like, okay, like, I got to pay mortgage this month. So
I will say Kim is the most bougie person when it comes to brands that I think we all know. And she's only got probably three or four really high end, you know, Hannah's very similar, I'm sure, Jeremiah. Three or four beautiful, like Louis Vuitton, like, but she doesn't go in excess of, you know, she's not crazy. I'm sure if she had a buco buck, she'd go crazy, but it's just reasonable. It's like a couple of bags, a couple of shoes, a couple of this.
Yeah.
My most expensive things that I have are Mont Blanc. That's my favorite brand. Mm. And I have, I will say this, I have $1,000 pen.
What?
I have a $1,000 Mont Blanc pen.
Fucker just went there. fucker just went there. Is it a fountain or is it a ballpoint?
It's a ballpoint with all the other pens. That's not a regular pen. Put that away from the other pens. That's like a quarter. Don't put it with the other quarters. Ballpoint? That quarter is separate.
Is it at least a fountain?
It's a Mont Blanc.
That's hilarious, dude.
I'm going to buy a fountain pen, but I also have a Mont Blanc bag and I have Mont Blanc luggage. So I probably have have $5,000 to $6,000 a month.
Let me just tell you, there are two things that I wish that I could invest in if I had money. Yeah. And this sounds stupid as fuck. But here it is. Ready? First edition books.
Mont Blanc bag.
Oh yeah. Listen, first edition books. I think I would invest in that, but also that fountain counts. Pens. I fucking love fountain pens. I don't have money. I have a couple fountain pens. I love fountain pens. If I had money to just blow on anything, I would be right there with you, Sean.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But it'd be fountain pens. I would say
the things that I spend the most money on in my life are my house, my furniture.
Tell you this much, guys. Like, Hannah, like I said, like, you know, introduced me to this whole world of, like, you know, design and everything like that. And she's not, like, you know, crazy or anything about it, you know. And she's told me something really cool about this. She says, it's not what you wear, it's how you wear it.
Absolutely.
And I'm a big believer of that shit, dude. Yeah, did I get a Gucci bag for her? Yeah, I did, you know. But, you know, because, you know, she doesn't care. She'll give me, like, first edition of a vinyl record that I want, you know. Right. It's like, fuck, you know. She doesn't complain about that, so I'm not going to complain about that. Dude, I'm easy wearing a flannel shirt and a fucking band shirt and jeans and boots, right. And I'm the happiest person.
Fuck yes.
But it's how you wear it, you know. And so that's what I love about Hannah is, like, you know, I look at her, I'm like, where'd you get that? She goes, oh, I got it at Marshall's. What the fuck? That looks fucking great. It's how you present yourself, dude. And I think that I love her about that.
I have 10 pair of Ray-Bans. I mean, it is what it is. You just collect them over the years, and it's the way you wear them, like you said, Jeremiah. These are actually my least favorite, just so you know. But they angle down so that you can't see the green.
I thought about that. Isn't it crazy how, like, Miranda was saying, like, remember that the conversation with the blue shirt, right? The blue. And I was just thinking, like, overall, like, the reason why people wear Ray-Bans, like, what was the reason why? Like those type of Ray-Bans.
Oh,
like,
easy.
Going back to where?
I saw it in Twilight, okay. And I saw it in fucking and Risky Business.
Exactly.
They look fucking
but then
cool.
It keeps going back. It goes all the way back to James Dean, right? It goes back. It keeps going back. And so it's just crazy how style just – it does transcend over time. It keeps – people keep, like, pushing that forward of a near cat, right? That's Jay-Z. Yeah. Like, overall, right. Like, it's these little themes there that people see, like, they pinpoint people.
But you start with an inspiration, right? You start with something like watching Twilight, and Edward has Wayfarer Ray-Bans. And so you buy the black Wayfarer Ray-Bans. And then you buy the tortoiseshell ones because you wear brown sometimes. And then you like the way the boyfriends look. And then you like the way the clubmasters look. And then you like the way the fucking, you know, whatever.
I want some Top Gun glasses.
And then sometimes, I mean, I've got these pair of Oakleys that I wear snow skiing, and they look like I'm fucking Toad from X-Men. It's horrible, but it's like the most comfortable glasses I've ever had in my life. And so I swear what you buy over time, in my opinion, like what you love, what you put your effort and energy into. I like the things that last. Clothes to me don't last. Sunglasses last. Books and vinyls and Blu-rays and you know, furniture. And I have art in my house. You've all seen my art collection. I love my art collection. It's not expensive. It's just art. I love it. It's just that's what I invest my time energy into, I guess is what I'm saying.
I love it.
To wrap this episode up.
Sorry.
Let's talk about the ending part here. Now, did you see it coming that Miranda was actually three steps ahead of the whole situation? Did you see that coming when you watch it? Because I didn't
watch it now. Yeah, like, but when I first watched it, no. But rewatching it,
I fucking forgot that happened. I'm watching it, going, "How does she get out of this?" I mean, it was a long time. It was 2007 when I saw this movie.
So the reason that I saw it coming was because all of a sudden the storyline, the movie pulled away from Miranda and onto Andy.
Anne Hathaway's
character. And then Anne Hathaway was running everywhere. And every reaction that she had, we have to remember she's new and fresh. And so the information that she has is garbled down through, you know, many layers, many layers of people looking to get ahead.
When she's working for the main person, that she probably does pay a little bit closer attention to and see the
exactly.
Yeah,
very true.
Exactly.
I didn't think she would walk away from. I looking back at it now, rewatching this movie recently, she walked away from Miranda in Paris.
Horribly.
Yeah.
And she still got a letter of recommendation.
But I was thinking in my head, at least like get the plane right home before you walk away. Like you're the another country. Get home first.
Now it's the time of the podcast where each of the hosts provides a score of the following scale. I birched that shit. I'm sorry, guys. That brings us to the end of our review. Now it's time of the podcast where each of the hosts provides a score on the following scale. Nigel.
Yes.
Can you provide
we have said that word scale, please. Every single different way we can besides how it's actually pronounced.
You put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable.
Okay. Wait, is it Nigel or is it Nigel?
Nigel or Nigel.
We can call him Nigel. Okay. Luisa again.
That works.
All right. Zero, the perfect movie. You don't need shit to enjoy it.
We're going to get hate mail.
One, feel good first cocktail. Two, a happy buzz. Three, you're going to Uber lifting home. Four, rough morning walk to shame. Five, blackout, shit face, spring break drunk. All right, gentlemen, let's write down our scores and see what we come up with.
Mine is written down. Ooh,
the drum rolls, please.
Let me think how there was any negatives. There's negatives. I don't like how they call her a six. They keep calling her a six. You know, she wasn't a six.
Nigel, just stop talking and just write it.
I think she also said, like, he also said to her, like, you have a fat ass, pretty much.
Oh, yeah.
That was
horrible. Did you think a six was like 6 out of 10 in hot wise? Was a size six.
Well, they said 4 is the new 2, or 2 is the new 4, and 0 is the new 2.
Yeah, that's sizes.
That's sizes, yeah. Horrible. But how about stores? Are we doing the same?
Okay, are we going here? Are we doing this on
Sean's got
three?
$1,000 pen.
Just so you know, I wrote in my mom blog.
I have my score right now.
I have my phone.
Okay. All
right, ready?
Are we ready?
Set. 3, 2, 1.
Okay. I can't see Sean's.
I mean.
Oh.
Sean wins.
Okay.
We're definitely in here. Okay. Okay.
Jeremiah, I appreciate you. Okay. You know what? Let me go ahead and start. This is my movie, and I'll go ahead and start. Okay. I don't have any regrets for choosing this movie. In fact, I really appreciated the being urged into watching this one again and seeing it, you know, for the first time in, you know, 20 or not 20 in what 15 years. Right. It is not as good a movie as I think it could have been. I remember not necessarily liking it when I first saw it. And I feel pretty much the same way. I think it's a good enough movie, but I don't think it's a great movie. I don't think that it's a movie that will be living on in infamy in a good way. In the future, I don't think it's made any kind of adjustments or impact on cinema. And I think I'm going to go back to what Amanda said afterwards, when I was trying to pick it apart and kind of talk about how, you know, it's really kind of this hypocritical look of what, you know, a girl should do, you know, in order to, you know, maintain her autonomy, but at the same time falling in line with what she didn't want to become and dot, dot, dot down that rabbit hole. And Amanda just looked at me and she said, yeah, but it's fun to watch. And I'll be the first one to admit that it is a fun to watch movie. Is it a great piece of cinema? No. Is it, you know, can we talk about the cinematography? Nope, not really. We can talk about, you know, Meryl Streep's performance, and we can pretty much end it there with the exception of Emily Blunt. And Emily Blunt is the reason that I picked this movie. And for her performance alone, I think that this movie is a fun to watch movie, right? So my score is 3.17. I am Ubering or lifting home, and I got a little bit of spillover there on that shot. So I'm going to just enjoy that as I Uber or Lyft home and am safe. Eddie, I'm going to send it to you, or Nigel, I'm going to go ahead and send it to you.
Gracias.
Oh, another pronunciation. I love that. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Emily.
That was nice. Yes.
So this movie came out 2006, right? 2006, 2007. I think this movie, there was a lot of movies around that time that, you know, you look at like Failure, The Launch, The Breakup. I'm thinking like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. All these, like The Princess Diary. The Princess Diaries or 27 Dresses. All those other movies, it had to be actor and actress. This movie could do it without the actor, which I feel like this movie holds a lot of power. It did it really great. This movie is a classic for Meryl Streep in a weird way. Like, it's not her, like, for her, she's probably like, I was just doing for the fun of it. But overall, she nailed it. And overall, it was the start of Anne Hathaway and the start of Emily Blunt. And you brought Stanley Tucci in here that just like nailed his opening and his doors open. Mm-hmm. I just felt like I loved a lot of the parts of like the funny parts. It just like, I think what Brandon was saying, his wife, it's fun to watch. It's a movie that I'm not actually ever mad if I start to watch it. I actually start to laugh certain scenes and I look forward to certain scenes. And then, it gets a little serious towards the end. But overall, like, it's a movie that, if it's made today, it'll definitely raise some eyebrows with certain scenes they probably have to update and take away. But overall, it's a feel-good movie. And overall, though, I'm going to still give this movie a happy buzz with a little over some. So it's a 2.15 is what I gave. So 2.15. It's a movie that I will be happy to see again, for the 16th time. It's a better than average movie for me. But there's some holes in there that I would like to, clean up a little bit and not hurt people's feelings as much.
Sean, do you want me to go before you?
Yeah, go ahead. We already know what my score is, so we're good.
This movie, I always was interested in to see it, but I never made the time to go see it. So I'm glad that Brandon selected this movie for the Emily Blunt from Oppenheimer. So, thank you, Brandon. I came in this film open-minded about it, and I was hoping to expect one thing and I got something totally different, like a different experience. Okay, man. I think Meryl Streep, when you think of this movie, you think of Meryl Streep. She's amazing. So is Emily Blunt. I think they elevate the movie. I also think that Stanley Tucci was absolutely terrific, as he is always with a lot of his films. But the problem with this movie for me is I couldn't connect with the movie or I really even enjoy it. I didn't think it was funny. I felt like it was predictable and heartless at times. And for me, it didn't really age well, especially from the time that it came out. I didn't really care about the story or its characters, and maybe if I rewatch this movie over again, I might see it and I might get a different experience, but I think that was the problem here, is that there was no one to root for in the end of this movie. And that was just kind of like my whole thing about this movie here. Again, when you watch this movie, you're watching it for the performance of Meryl Streep, Emily Blunt, and some of the other actors here. That's what makes this movie kind of legendary and has that cult following, I believe, So my score is a 3.5. I'm Uber and Lyft home. You guys actually did talk my score down when we were during the conversation, because I do see how it's very has like this a powerful message in the end of it, where I believe that it still holds up very strong as of today. And I think a lot of people need to see something like
you're
that.
You're 3.15, bro, or you're 3.5?
3.5.
Okay. And Brandon, what are you?
I'm sorry, a 3.17.
Well, with those stupid scores, I think you're trying to tell the world that you're taking yourself too seriously to care what you put on your back. What you don't know is that that score was not just blue, but it was chosen. Anyway. Not just turquoise. Not even lapis. It was chosen for you.
Lapis lazuli.
I think this movie you're a little hard on it. I think that this movie, I think if you watch it again, Jeremiah, you would find a lot to engage with. I think it's funny. I think that Stanley Tucci is just hysterical. I think Meryl Streep delivers, perhaps not one of a banner performance, but one of her. If you're going to rate her performances in A, B, C movies, it's right between a B and a C. It's a really great performance for Meryl Streep. And a B performance for Meryl Streep is like an A performance for every other actress. I agree with you that Anne Hathaway is just – she's tiring. The girl is just tiring. She's not – there's nothing there that makes me excited about her anymore. I loved her in Princess Diaries, and that was about it.
It
just stopped with that. Okay. anyway,
That's the one.
I understand what you guys are saying. Do I think this is the greatest rom-com ever? Do I think this has the greatest messaging ever? I didn't mind. No, the answer is no. I didn't mind the message. You know, you got to lose weight. You got to look at the part. You got to be a size 4 instead of a size 6. Because I think that is a real pressure that women put on women. I think that all over the not positive. I'm not going to say it's a good thing. Anyway, I'm going to give this film a 2.1. I think it's a little bit above average. I think it's a happy buzz with a little bit of an extra shot or a little trickle of a shot. I enjoy it every time I watch it. I think it's funny. I think it's got good messaging. I cannot stand the guy from Entourage. Can't remember his name.
Adrian.
He plays the boyfriend, Adrian.
He was horrible in this movie, dude.
I haven't seen him in anything good. Like, he's overrated. And I think Stanley Tucci is a gem that should be, you know, protected at all costs. I remember him in Julia Julia. I remember him in The Core. I remember him in so many great movies. And so I'm very excited.
He has to be friends, right? That has to
be. Oh, yeah. They're very good friends.
You have to. I feel like they are in real life.
He's actually married to Emily Blunt's sister. Did you know that?
What? Isn't that cool? Yeah.
That's cool.
And have you seen, if you ever want to really laugh at something, he does these Italian cooking Instagram reels where he cooks Italian.
Really?
And it's, I'm telling you, it's the most uncomfortably funny thing you'll ever watch in your life.
Well, he's all into cooking.
He's a great actor. He's fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah, very much so. All right, Eddie, when we combine the scores and divide by 4, what does The Devil Wears Prada get an average rating of?
It gives us a 2.73. That's a 2.73. That means it's right between a happy buzz and you're the Uber and lifting home.
So Jeremiah, you know what? I think that's right where it should
2.73.
be.
2.73. I think that it's by its own store, too, to be honest.
You're absolutely right, bro. You know, actually, it's kind of weird. Go ahead, Dave.
I just had a thought here. A thought. Okay. We rate on a scale of 0 to 5, which means if we doubled our scores, we would be at the same as
a 10.
Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb.
IMDb. Yeah.
I wonder how often our scores are the same or different than Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb. I just a thought in my head just crossed it now. So anyway, all right. So Jeremiah, where does that refresh my memory, Eddie? What is the score?
2.73.
Where does that land on our list of movies that we have reviewed?
It's number 53 now on
number
our list.
53. So what is better than Devil Wears Prada?
Moulin Rouge, Rocky, Terminator, A Knight's Tale, Pitch Perfect.
Okay. What is worse than Devil Wears Prada?
So what's worse than Devil Wears Prada is Clueless, Vanilla Sky,
Fuck Dracula,
300, okay. To All the Boys I Loved Before.
Absolutely.
This is 40.
Those are almost all my movies, just so you know. Those first three that he just listed off are all mine. Clueless is fucking gem.
This one's yours. This one's yours, too. It's okay.
Clueless is a gem.
This is yours, too. So, yeah, it's right between Pitch Perfect and Clueless. I mean, you know, that's where it's at.
I think it's in that vein. It's in that kind of doesn't hold up, but still funny. Yeah. Clueless didn't hold up, and it was kind of funny.
I think it's supposed to be where it's supposed to be at.
I agree.
All right. So now that we're at the end of this podcast episode, it's time for one of our gentlemen to tell us which movie we're going to be watching and reviewing next week. So since Eddie has the next selection, Eddie, what are we watching and why?
And remember, before you select, I just want to explain what Eddie is doing is he's taking an actor, director, cinematographer, composer, someone who worked on Devil Wears Prada, and he is choosing a movie.
The Gaffer Boy.
On that person, Gaff Specialist, you know?
Calvin Klein.
He's using that criteria to pick his movie. So with that, Eddie, go ahead. Tell us what you picked.
Who's the actor?
You want me to tell you?
Meryl Streep.
Right now.
Yeah, tell us who's your selection of what you're going with.
It was a tough choice because there were so many great ones in this movie. But I wanted to dive more into Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
Yes. So, good choice. And there was a number of movies with that. Like, trust me, I had Easy A on that list.
Easy A.
Easy A was on it. I really wanted that. But you know what? I thought, let's go into the 2012 action-packed movie called The Hunger Games.
Yes.
Which was quite quite big in its day.
Eddie, good call,
man.
Oh,
my God. He was in there. Good call.
Yes, he had purple
especially
hair.
With the new one out that recently was out.
Yes, we have Jennifer. We have Jennifer Lawrence. We have
PETA.
Elizabeth
Banks. Hemsworth.
We've got Hemsworth. Yes. We've
got Hemsworth. Lenny Kravitz.
We've also got
fuck you, Eddie. This is perfect.
Lenny Kravitz. Wes Bentley. I believe we have Donald Sutherland. Julianne Moore, I think, was in the subsequent ones, and so is Philip Seymour Hoffman. So
I can't select. Wait.
Yep.
No, you can't select for the franchise.
So, Jeremiah, you get to pick off of that, man. You get to pick off of that.
May the odds ever be in your favor. All right. If you enjoyed our review or fan of the podcast, we ask that you please subscribe wherever you're listening and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. This is our 5th season. And we are going to bring you, I'm sorry, is that correct?
Yeah, it's fifth. Yeah.
Fifth, yes.
Yeah, we're fifth season. We're up there.
And we're going to bring you 52 movie episodes in the year 2024. So we're very excited to do that. And I keep saying it because it's going to be true. It's going to be flipping true.
Yes, it is.
You can find us on Instagram at the.gentlemanpodcast, which has been fixed after 100 and something episodes on the script. Thank you, Brandon. you can visit our website at thegentlemanpodcast.com. And if you want to, you can reach out to us by email at hosts with an S, H-O-S-T-S, at thegentlemanpodcast.com. We want to thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next week for The Hunger Games. Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers.
Cheers, everyone.
Peace Cheers, out. Guys.
That's all.
That's all.
Ooh, Jim Malone's in this movie, right?
Oh, Jim Malone. That's the number 2.
Ah, damn it.
God damn it.
You have a lot to pick from, okay? So let's not be picky.
I'm not picky. I was just excited for some of the actors that are not in this movie.